Welcome to On Mic with Jordan Rich, where we celebrate performers, broadcasters, actors, producers, and those involved with the most expressive of all instruments, the human voice. Today,
I'm talking baseball in the Sox.
Yes, thank you, Terry Cashman. We're going to talk a little baseball with a man who spends a lot of his time doing just that, talking to us about what he's seeing on the field. He's Dave O'Brien, voice of the Red Sox on the New England Sports Network, known as NESN. Born in Quincy, Massachusetts, a graduate of Syracuse University, where he studied broadcasting, Dave is, in my humble opinion, one of the best play-by-play guys out there, having called games for the Atlanta Braves, the Marlins, beginning in their inaugural year, and, of course, the Boston Red Sox, both on radio and television. Dave has worked at ESPN doing baseball, the NBA, college basketball, and even soccer. We'll touch on that a bit later. But it's his love, respect, and dedication to the game of baseball and his beloved Red Sox, my hometown team too, that will be the center point of our discussion. Well, it is such a great thrill to talk with somebody who I listen to and watch regularly. And, of course, the fact that you're a local guy, by local I mean you were born in Quincy, Massachusetts. I was also born, well, pretty close. I grew up in Wollaston for the first couple of years. Dave O'Brien is here, voice of the Red Sox and many other sports. How are you, Dave?
Jordan, only the best come from Quincy. You know that. And I'm a Wollaston Beach guy myself. And two of my four brothers born in Quincy as well before we moved on to Marshfield when my folks moved a bit further in the South Shore. And you know, I have great memories of that place. But, you know, as you say, now we're in New Hampshire. We've been on the seacoast in Rye, New Hampshire, my wife and kids and I, for a long time since we moved back from West Palm Beach after we stopped doing the Marlins many years ago and signed on full-time with ESPN. It's amazing how you come home in the end, and it's been a great thing for me.
Living the dream. I always think about myself as one of the luckiest men on earth to do what I do. But man, reading your bio and knowing of your travels in this world of play-by-play, you got to be pinching yourself.
It is. It's one of those deals, and I guarantee you've felt the same way with the time that you've been in this market and all the stuff you've been able to do. You know, you hear certain call letters, and WBZ has always been one of those for me. You grew up, you know, listening to these voices in your head, going to school in the morning and then turning on the radio at night and listening to ball games, whatever the sport might be. It could be Johnny Most. It could be, you know, it could be Ned Martin. It could be anybody. And then you find yourself sitting in those seats, you know, in the very same places that those guys sat or, you know, in the same circles. And you feel blessed by it. I do, and I bet you do, too, because it sounds corny, it sounds a little hokey, but it's not meant to be. If you're a broadcaster, if this is what you do, if you live at the microphone like we do, and to be able to matriculate in those circles is really a great honor. And every summer, I tell this all the time, every summer, at least four or five times, I will just stop at a booth before going on the air or in between innings, and kind of look out at the monster and look out at the skyline there at Fenway. And it's amazing. I do remind myself that, you know, I'm the luckiest guy because I've got this job. I've got this opportunity and this honor to sit in this seat that I hoped I might, but I never really believed I would, get to that point. And so it's every summer, several times, I'll make sure I do that just to remind myself how lucky I am.
I want to take you back to your days as a young kid, and I've been reading a lot about you in various interviews, and you talk about you and your dad listening and then going to games. And, of course, you're also an athlete in your own right, so you were able to play some of these games that you now broadcast. The magic that is part of being a kid and listening to radio, and you're a little younger than I am, of course, but I don't know if that magic still exists for kids, you know, 8, 9, 10, or 11, but I was the same way. I listened to Ken Coleman and Ned Martin and all the greats from the national scene. And I just said, wow, what a terrific opportunity to sit there and describe something so that I can see it in my mind.
And you know, to take it a step further, it's describing something that is near and dear to you. You know, as you said, I grew up, as so many of us did, going to ball games at Fenway with my dad, you know. And I remember my dad's great big, he was 6'2", 245 pounds, a big man. you know, and when he grabbed you by the hand, you were going. Wherever he was going, you were going. And I'll never forget him, you know, guiding me across Yawkey Way and into the ballpark for the first time as a kid. And you know, there's something really special about that, you know, that never goes away. You know, hanging with your family, watching the Red Sox at Fenway Park. That's such a time-honored tradition. I don't think that'll ever go away. But, you know, baseball on radio is an interesting one when you bring that up because, you know, I consider it a very high form of broadcast artwork, you know, to do play-by-play on the radio well. I don't think I've ever gotten it right. I want to try. I want to continue to try and get it as close to perfect as I can. I don't think I ever will. And that's part of it, too. But I really believe that because it was the Red Sox and is the Red Sox for me, that separates it. I've done games and I've done teams in other parts of the country. You know, I've done the New York Mets and I've done the Marlins and I was on ESPN for, you know, a decade and a half doing a lot of games in a lot of ballparks and a lot of stadiums. But it's just different and always will be because, you know, I've had a love affair with the Red Sox since the first time I walked through those doors.
Right, and it's so true that Red Sox fans have a connection and a relationship with the announcers, and I'm only going to mention this name because he's not connected directly with the Red Sox, but he's baseball legend and he's the god, Vin Scully. And when Vin Scully's retirement was announced, people cried, and when he had that beautiful send-off at the World Series, I kept thinking of the connection that we have, and I will say this right now, there are a lot of New Englanders and a lot of people around the country who have a connection to you because you are the voice of the Red Sox. It's just, it's something very special. I don't know how to describe it beyond that.
Yeah, it does. And again, you feel honored to be, you know, the latest in the line of those guys who've been able to say that. And, you know, I have regular dinners with my pal Sean McDonough, you know, who is a Red Sox voice for so long. And, you know, that's going to always be, with everything Sean's been able to accomplish, including Monday Night Football, that will always be, I think, the preeminent thing in his life that he was able to do. And that's no joke. I mean, that's just the way that is. And you know, this summer, a couple of times, Jordan, I popped in a tape that someone cut from me from Ned Martin and Jim Woods doing a game, a playoff game that Jerry Remy was playing in, you know, in the early
yes.
80s, just to hear how they did it and to hear the chemistry between the two. And, you know, there was surprisingly little interplay, you know,
right.
in what they did over 2.5, 3 hours. I thought, boy, you know, they talked all the time and they were finishing each other's stories. It wasn't that way at all. But in my mind, in my ear, in my head, you know, that I remember back to the time I was, you know, 8, 9 years old listening to these guys, it was different.
The rooster and the possum, can't forget those guys. And let's talk a little bit about the art, because you are an exceptional broadcaster in a very, very unique area of the business, which is play-by-play, particularly baseball. Who were the mentors in your life? I mean, you mentioned a couple of names, but were there actual tutors, teachers, people who took you aside and said, Dave, if you're going to call a game, steps A, B, and C have to be followed? Or was it more intrinsic to your nature to figure it out on your own?
I think probably it's a combination of both of those things. You know, when you look back on it, you're like, well, who really influenced, you know, me stylistically? And you're like, well, that's a little over the top to think of yourself that way. But if you're asking that question, I would say certainly Ken Coleman, another Quincy guy, who I met when I was 17 years old up in Keene, New Hampshire, when I was working part-time on WKNE radio, my very first radio job. First time I had ever put on a headset and spoken into a microphone. And I got a part-time gig. I think I was making about $6 an hour. And Ken came up for the Jimmy Fund drive. He used to get in his car and drive all over New England. It was a very different experience, the Jimmy Fund back then. And he was the chairman. And I got a chance to meet him and spend 2 hours with him on the air. And I remember one thing he told me that I never forgot, which was, if you want to do this, and I told him I wanted to be a play-by-play man, he said, if you want to do this, learn to land softly on the ear. Because you're going to be in people's homes for hours at a time. You're going to be in their cars. You're going to be on their beach blanket. You know, you have to land softly and be pleasing as much as you can. And he said, it doesn't mean you don't get excited. He said, you should go for it. Get excited. You know, scream, yell, holler, all of that when it you know, benefits the moment. But, you know, you have to land softly. And I thought that was great advice to hear at that age. And I always considered Ken, stylistically in many ways, the guy I patterned myself after at a pretty young age.
I knew Ken not personally quite well, but I had him on my radio show many times and did a couple of events with him, and he was a true gentleman. And you're right, that sense that you're in somebody's life, particularly baseball, 162 times a year, maybe more if the playoffs are occurring, and they do, thankfully, right. That's a lot of connection with an announcer and with a person whose job it is to relay information. I guess you've been asked this question, and I know the answer, but I'll ask you again. One of your favorite calls, I know it involves Big Poppy in 2013. You want to talk about that?
That's a great example of go ahead and lose it if you're going to lose it, right? And afterwards I think Lou Merlone was in the booth with me at the time along with Joe Castiglione, and I think I said, did I actually levitate on that? I think I levitated when Poppy hit the home run.
Red Sox trailing 5-1, and Poppy gets in, and the big right-hander Benoit delivers. Swinging a high deep drive into right field. That one scalded to right. Hunter on the move. Racing back. It's over his head. It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz. David Ortiz. David Ortiz.
When David, the ALCS, it was game two against the Detroit Tigers, and Red Sox weren't scoring any runs. They were down 5-1 and looked like they were about to go down 2-0. And the backstory on that, of course, is if that happened, if they were down 0-2, the Sox had to go to Detroit and were facing Verlander the very next game for game three. So effectively, that series is over. I mean, you're not coming back and winning that series if you don't win game two. And then for David to do what he did, you know, as you know, and we all know, Poppy doesn't just, you know, hit a ground rule double and score a couple of runs. He hits a grand slam into the bullpen that nearly kills Torrey Hunter trying to get it. And I lost it. I mean, I could not believe, and people are like, well, what do you mean? He hits grand slams. He hits the most dramatic home runs in Red Sox history, maybe in all of baseball history. And I'm like, yeah, but you got to understand. I mean, it was over unless he did that. Mm. And that only tied the game. Red Sox had to win that game in extra innings. On a Salta LaMacchia base hit. But I think, you know, when I go back and think of that, it's almost an out-of-body experience. And what kept coming into my mind is just, he did it again. David Ortiz, David Ortiz, David Ortiz. And, you know, it's probably been played to death, and you know, at some point people get sick of it. But I still believe it's one of the great moments I was honored to be able to see, whether I called it or not. Just to be able to see that in person, I'll never forget it.
Well, it's interesting that calls become legendary, and everyone remembers when we won the hockey event in 1980 against the Russians. I mean, certain calls remind us of the events themselves and where we were in time, and that's why I think it's so special. But you mentioned what Ken Coleman told you, Dave, being easy on the ears, and you also teased the fact that it's important not to overspeak and not to try to do too much. Sometimes less is more. And a question I'm sure you've been asked before by people in the business is, what's the difference for you, really, when you go from radio to TV? I mean, TV, the picture's there, and you have to adjust your style, I would imagine.
Oh, tremendously. There's no question about that. And I think it's permissible, to be honest with you, Jordan, to do a little more of a radio call than some people do on the television side. Because, you know, when people are watching the game, they're not necessarily watching everything. In fact, you know, they may only watch for 20 minutes on a given night. And even when they're there for those 20 minutes, you know, they're helping the kids with homework, they're washing dishes, they're working crossword puzzles, they're paying bills. It could be a million different things. Their eyes aren't always on the screen. And I think it is incumbent on the play-by-play guy, or man or woman, to be able to work your voice, use your voice to raise the attention at the moment where it's appropriate. Not when it's inappropriate, but, you know, when you've got the bases loaded, it may only be the fourth inning. But you know, Sox are down a couple of runs. My tone's going to be different on purpose. First of all, I'm leaning in. I'm you know, something could happen here. You know, Benintendi's at the plate. you know, Red Sox have a chance to tie or take the lead here. It's a huge moment early, fairly early in the game. The turning point in the game doesn't always come in the eighth and ninth inning. Oftentimes it is the fourth inning. So, you know, bring attention, bring that that intensity a little bit more. It's not a put on. It's I'm into that moment, but it's required to do it at that time, and elevating that intensity just a notch or two. You know, it's not the seventh game of the World Series, but you know, it is an opportunity for the Red Sox to maybe take the lead and win this ball game, put it away early. So I'm very mindful of that in the call itself, and you know that can be on TV and radio.
What's impressive about professional of your stature, Dave, is, and I know we sound like we're stroking each other here, but please allow me the opportunity, is the fact that, you know, when you're doing a game, particularly baseball, which can be 3 or 4 hours in some cases, a lot of time to fill. And what I love about the work you do is that you have this frame of reference, and a lot of it has to do with the old days, I know, and we're not just for nostalgia, but also just to frame something in a point in time. And sometimes it's just a story that has nothing to do with the game itself, but might have something to do with one of the players or one of the coaches or somebody in the stands. That's the beauty of broadcasting, when you can be a storyteller and know that the audience is there to accept it.
To come along with you. And yeah. It's one of the things that I love about New England and the Sox and Fenway and all the history that we have that we're tied up in is, you know, I can reference, you know, Bernie Carbo, and you know exactly who I'm talking about.
Oh, of course.
I don't have to preface it with who Bernie is. And you probably know, you know, a good bit about his history and his backstory, because Red Sox fans are really, really ingrained in it, and they're really intelligent. And you can take them along anywhere you want to go, or anywhere Jerry wants to go, or Eck wants to go, and look at the guys that I get to broadcast with. I mean, both of those guys were there when Bucky Dent hit the home run into the net.
That's
you
right.
You know, and Yaz looked like he had been punched in the stomach on the warning track. We were all there, right? And even if my kid didn't see that, and aren't that aware of it, they've heard me tell that story a million times. About that day and about what it felt like to be a Sox fan, you know, at that moment, and how wonderful it is that so much of the depression of that has been washed away by championships and World Series rings. I mean, think about that. It's, you know, that, and those are the times you pinch yourself too, you know, when an executive walks into the booth and hands you a World Series ring. And that makes you all of a sudden a 4-year-old kid in Quincy again.
Oh gosh,
you're sitting there looking at this thing, going, "That's not for me." I mean, you know, and I know it sounds corny, but believe me, it really, you know, first time Larry Lucchino came in and said, "Hey, we hope we can hand you guys a number of these over the years," you know, you're almost in a state of shock.
Indeed.
Like, you know, players get those, but when broadcasters get them. You don't wear them as often, maybe, and you only wear them on special occasions, because they really are they are what the players did. It's the accomplishment of the ball club and the organization, not the broadcast crew. But still, it's a real kick. It really is.
You ought to see a friend of mine, of course, well-known name, Gil Santos. He's now retired. When he was the Patriots play-by-play guy, he has about 4 of those monster rings. And every once in a while, when I see him, he's wearing all 4. I mean, it looks like...
And he should. Gil should. Yeah.
He's well-deserving. You mentioned the impact of being the Red Sox announcer. And when you travel to other cities, and your travel schedule is ridiculous because you're traveling with the team, is it, as we suspect, Red Sox Nation is truly a national movement? You see it because you're at these ballparks. We just see occasional snippets on TV. But what's the vibe around the country for the Sox?
It's everywhere, and I know that, you know, there are not many franchises in all of sports, forget about just baseball, that have that kind of following. But, you know, it's funny. We play a game in the booth every night. You know, whether we're in Kansas City or Anaheim or Detroit, you know, and the game is how many Sox fans are here tonight. When I was a kid, I never thought that, you know, the Red Sox belonged to anybody else outside of my neighborhood, my school, or outside of New England. But, you know, the more you travel, and now I'm moving into my 13th year calling the Sox between radio and television, it just increases when we play that little game and we go into the ballpark in the broadcast booth when a visiting ballpark. You know, will the Red Sox fans outnumber the hometown fans tonight? And how often that happens is kind of amazing and a little embarrassing for those particular franchises. The Red Sox are going to open up at Tampa Bay on March 29. And, you know, by the end of that series, there will have been more Red Sox fans through the door, I'm sure, at Tropicana Field. That's not the only place that happens. And especially when the Red Sox don't play an opponent for a while, say the Dodgers, you know, haven't played the Dodgers in a while and then go out to Dodger Stadium to play. It's incredible how much red is in Dodger Stadium for those 3 days. It still gets in your head like, that shouldn't happen to this degree.
I know.
You know, there should be a lot more blue here than red, but it's just a tribute to, it's a tribute to what the Red Sox did in 03 and 04 in particular. And you know, you and I both know that turned everything around.
Of course.
Those 2 years in particular, that turned Red Sox Nation on its ear and, you know, doubled and tripled and quadrupled the number of people in that club.
We'll be right back to the program in just a moment. I did want to take time to thank you for listening to On Mic with me, Jordan Rich. You'll find links to my website and Facebook page in the show notes. So I invite you to reach out to me. I'd love to hear your ideas for future shows and guests. Since I've heard you take requests, here's one from me. When you get a moment, I'd love for you to rate and review this podcast in all of the important places we hang out, including Apple, Android, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. It'll go a long way in helping me build this audience up and keep the studio humming with interesting content. And now, back to On Mic with Jordan Rich. Hey, that's me. One of the joys of doing my podcast is I get to hang and schmooze with people in the business whom I've enjoyed listening to and working with or getting to know. And I want to take you back again to a clip that I read about you in an interview with the Syracuse newspaper. I've got to talk to Dave about this because this is me in a different realm. You're playing a sport, organized whatever it is, basketball, football, and you're calling it as you're playing it. You're doing play-by-play for yourself and the game, and it's driving the other players crazy, of course. It's akin to what I will do and had done as a kid, not with sports per se, but with interviews or with disc jockey stuff. I would just pretend. And I guess the question in closing here is more of a comment. This is fun. If it weren't fun, we wouldn't do it. But you were having a blast doing that, driving your other teammates crazy, weren't
you? That's probably when I figured out, no probably about it, that's when I figured, hey, you can make a living doing this. I mean, this isn't just, I'm not just goofing around and driving, you know, annoying my teammates and my coaches. I can make a living doing this if it works out, and never thought in a million years, you know, it would wind up at Fenway Park. But figured, broadcasting sports, and because I like to talk and love the idea of being the first one to tell the story, which I bet you did too. I mean, you want to be the first one to the microphone.
Sure.
You know, that's where it really made its imprint on me. And I still have friends who were teammates of mine in high school who still look at me like, you know, what a pain you were, man. I mean, you drove us all crazy, you know, on buses, you would be commenting on the game afterwards as if it were a post game show. And, you know, they wanted to throw stuff at me. But I mean, at the end, that's what lit the fire for me, because it was so much fun and remains so much fun. And I've been lucky enough to broadcast literally thousands and thousands of games all over the world, really. And I can't think of a moment when it wasn't fun. It's, you know, sports announcing really is the candy store. And I get to spend my time in the candy store. I'm the luckiest guy in the world.
And you're also lucky, I'm going to go out on a limb here, but I think I know the answer to this question. You're lucky because you have a family that supports you, because you're on the road a lot. And I know you married your high school sweetheart, and she must be an angel, because you're not home a lot. I mean, and that's the thing about broadcasting. People should remember it's not a 9-to-5 gig Monday through Friday necessarily. It's all kinds of weird shifts and times, and in your case, travel. So how do you provide that balance in your life? There's a simple sort of suggestion to other people who are struggling with the schedule that you have, that kind of thing. How do you make it work?
Well, I don't think there's any, I don't have any magic secret to anything other than to say marry somebody, you know, who loves what you do and loves you for doing it. And, you know, I'm very fortunate that my wife, as you mentioned, Debbie, we've been married 33 years. Debbie loves the Red Sox. She loves baseball. She loves going to games. She watches and listens to games that I knows how. It would drive me crazy. But she does it. She has the games on, and she loves to be in her seats at Fenway, 40, 50 nights a year, because, following the Red Sox is a passion for her. So I think that's a lucky stroke. But, she and I have been together a long time, and we've raised three beautiful kids. And, we've got one who's coming home in the next 3 weeks from Afghanistan. He's been serving there for nine months, and we can't wait to get my son Mike home. And I have one daughter who's in the business, working on the West Coast, and she broke into broadcasting, and my youngest is a history nut and just graduated college, and she's going to work in museums in her life. And, they're all over the place. But I think every one of them grew up, as part of this business, as you have to be, as you mentioned, with all the travel and all the time that it takes. It's a passion. It's a love affair for me, but your family is part of it. They're with you lockstep. Every place you go, every move you make, every job you take, they have to be there with you. And I think if you can cultivate early in their lives that, hey, dad is having, or mom is really having a fun time with this. This is unusual. It's kind of unique. Let's all enjoy it. I think that's the way to go.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I think that's the blessing when you look back at your career to this point, that you have had support. But also, in your case, I think you've had the opportunity to do a lot of things and never get bored. You're never bored when you're calling a Red Sox game. You never know what's going to happen. I want to ask you one more thing before we let you go, and that is, I know in your history, you've taken a few road trips to different types of sporting events, and the one that I really want to ask you about is the World Cup soccer event. Because to me, that's a game I still don't understand the impact of the game and the success of the game. I know worldwide it's the phenomenon that it is. But there are no breaks. There are no timeouts, per se. I mean, it just keeps rolling along. That much different than calling a baseball game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very. I found it to be a challenge. And certainly, there's a certain part of the populace that's so invested in the sport and in soccer. And, it can be difficult when, a non-English voice, a non-English accent calls those games. But, my point of view on that was, yeah, there are no stoppages, so we're not going to stop either. We can tell stories. We can still, give a lot of anecdotal and interesting information about players as the game is, as right. the match is progressing. And I think, had some success with that, given, what the ratings reflected on ABC and all of that. But I never looked at soccer as something I was going to do for 20, 25, 30 years. Baseball, always different for me. Basketball, football, the stick and ball sports of my youth. Soccer I played and played through high school and love it to this day and still follow it very closely and watch the Premier League on a regular basis. But I still think that the sport has yet to really hook into the American psyche for one reason in particular, and that is there's not enough scoring for the average American sports fan. There's just not.
Right.
And the whole idea of ties, of course, is still very foreign to us and in so many ways. But I think it's a beautiful game, and played well, it's just priceless to watch. And I think every American should see a World Cup overseas to get a real sense of what that means to the rest of the world and why. It had a great impact on me.
And finally, I've said finally a couple of times, but I can't resist asking you a few other things, but I promise this is the last question. You've had to be a reporter on the scene and not always happy moments at a ball game or in a series. I mean, you'll see a player get injured or you'll see the Red Sox lose by a whisker, and you have to be the bearer of the truth, but you know that the truth really hurts. The question really revolves around the emotion that is involved in a sporting event, and it's real emotion. And I think the audience can tell if an announcer is real, is there, is in the moment. Do you agree?
I agree. I think the audience should know. And if not, they're going to detect a phony. And you make a great point, too, about, when you're on the air as much as we are, like calling the Red Sox every night, 3 hours, 162 times a year, every single night, you're in people's living rooms, you're into their neighborhood, you're into their life in a small way, but it's an important way because it's the Red Sox. And they're gonna know whether or not you're a phony, whether you're really invested in this, whether it's something you truly care about. And that's a big difference between local and national television, I've found, is that, you know, the whole approach is different. On the television side or the radio side with the Red Sox, I'm very comfortable calling Dustin Pedroia Petey. I'll call Mookie by his first name. I'd never think to do that on a national broadcast if I were covering the Red Sox, because the guy in Omaha has no idea who Petey is, and he still thinks Mookie Betts, you better say his whole name, otherwise he's not going to know who he is. I think that's part of it. There's a familiarity, yes, but there's also a, you know, this is coming from the heart, and you have to broadcast that way if you're going to broadcast your hometown team. Don't you want to? I mean, don't you want to kind of leave your heart out on your sleeve every night? Yeah, because this is your team. This is your ball club,
right.
And the Red Sox are mine.
You exhibit the professionalism, preparation, and the pride in the product, and I think that's really evident. Dave, thank you so much. I know the season's about to start. We're excited, as we all are, because it's spring and the grass is going to get green again, and the Red Sox are going to win again, we assume, and you're going to be there calling it. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast and for all that you've done. The kid from Quincy, done well.
Jordan, thanks so much. Very, very, very pleased to be with you. Really enjoyed it very much. Thank you, my friend.
Be sure to watch and listen to Dave O'Brien and Jerry Remy on NESN as they broadcast the Sox games. And before we sign off, I kind of like to remind myself every once in a while why baseball, unlike any other sport, kind of has a special place. So who better than James Earl Jones, with the voice that God is envious of, to tell us what we all intrinsically understand about the game?
People will come, Ray.
They'll come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door as innocent as children, longing for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around, you'll say. It's only $20 per person. They'll pass over the money without even thinking about it. But it is money they have and peace they like.
And they'll walk out to the bleachers, sit in shirt sleeves on a perfect afternoon. Find they have reserved seats somewhere along one of the baselines where they sat when they were children and cheered their heroes. And they'll watch the game, and it'll be as if they dipped themselves in magic waters. The memories will be so thick they'll have to brush them away from their faces. People will come, Ray. The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. Baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, is a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good and it could be again. People will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
You've been listening to On Mic with Jordan Rich, a podcast produced by Chart Productions. Just click the Jordan Rich podcast link at chartproductions.com for more. Please subscribe, download, rate, and review us on Apple and any other podcast platform. Hey, it's great to be with you as always. Thanks for listening. Have a terrific day.